This is episode 41 with Elizabeth Retzer.
Welcome to the As Told by Nomads podcast, where you'll learn how nomads, third culture kids, entrepreneurs, and leaders all over the world embrace their global identity and use their difference to make a difference. And now, having lived on four different continents, here's your host, Tayo Roxas.
It's a pleasure to have Elizabeth Retzer with me here today. She is Norwegian, but she grew up for a lot of her periods of her life in Ivory Coast. Welcome to the show, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
So, I talked about your background there for a little bit, but can you give us more information as to why you grew up in those two countries and maybe even where else you've grown up in?
Sure. I grew up in Ivory Coast and Norway. I'm Norwegian. My parents are Norwegian, mm-hmm. But my parents were missionaries in Ivory Coast. So from the ages of 2.5 until 16, I spent about 10.5 of those years in Ivory Coast. Okay.
So then you identify yourself as Ivorian, Norwegian, Norwegian, Ivorian, or just Norwegian?
Well, that's always kind of a difficult question, which also depends on the circumstances, I guess.
Okay. But, you're talking to a West African from Nigeria, so, what would you say? What would you say if I asked you, said, hey, Elizabeth, where are you from? What would you say?
I would probably say Norway.
Norway, okay.
Yeah, I would.
Mm. Okay. With Norway, the first periods of my life, I grew up in Sweden, Stockholm. I don't remember much, but yeah. I'm always curious about the Scandinavian countries. I don't know. Could you give us maybe a little bit of the personality with Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Finland? Because every time I talk to someone from Scandinavia, I hear, we are the best. I know there's the hockey competition, but then there's also
there's the skiing
and many things. But in your opinion, what are the personalities of each of the Scandinavian countries?
Oh, wow. Well, I would actually discount Finland, though.
Okay, Finland. Finland is out.
They have their own thing going. Okay. But, I would say Norway, Sweden, and Denmark have a lot in common in terms of, having that Scandinavian thing. But there are differences as well, I guess. I've been watching the cross-country skiing world championship today in Sweden just before you called, which makes me feel very, very Norwegian.
Okay.
Bring out that nationality thing quite a bit. And we did come before the first Swede, just pointing that out.
Okay, all right. There's that competitor. I remember vaguely, though. I remember... Mm-hmm. Was it the winters that were longer? You had longer days during certain periods of time, or So the days last for how long?
Well, right now it's getting lighter, but December and January are very dark. In the darkest days in December before it turns around and starts getting lighter again, we have 5-6 hours of daylight middle of the day. Sun rises at about, 9:30 or something, and then starts, or it sets at maybe 2:30 or 3:30,
And so you're actually at work during the, when it turns dark?
Yeah, you go to work, it's dark, you come home, it's dark.
Are there any specific celebrations during this time today? Is there, cool things to do, we have so much darkness right now, maybe we should, do something to celebrate? So I'm not quite sure.
Well, it's Christmas, and throughout the entire month of December, there's a lot of candles for everything we do, because just to make the atmosphere more cozy and create some light because it's just dark everywhere.
Perfect. Gotcha. I'm always fascinated by these things because, I grew up there partly, but I didn't stay there long enough to remember. So every time I run into someone from a Scandinavian right. country, I was like, you got to tell me. So
we compensate with a lot of candles and a lot of coziness and a lot of like indoors activities.
Yeah, no, it's good. Yeah, no, I'm freezing here in New York City, and I know it's nothing compared to what it is there. But
well, actually, right now you guys are beating us.
We are.
Yeah, you are. Because right now the snow is melting, and yesterday felt very springy and nice, and you know, the trickle of the melting ice, and actually plus temperatures, we had like 5 or 6 degrees above zero, like centigrades.
Yeah, yeah. Just rub it in. You know, it's okay. All right. So you've traveled and lived and worked in several countries. Can you tell us what you learned from your time overseas?
Wow, lots of stuff, I guess. I think some of the most important things are how it's possible to do things and see things from different perspectives. And, you know, I guess in the West, we kind of think that, you know, our way is the best way or we're more advanced or whatever. But I think that that's something that I also see in other TCKs, that ability or that perspective to be able to see things from more than one side and, you know, being able to think of solutions for a problem in several ways there's just so much to learn from other places in the world and we really need to take that with us. In life, I guess.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, I was talking to someone the other day, and we were talking about the benefits of traveling and identifying with several cultures. And one of the ways that we brought up, one of the topics that was brought up was the fact that in a business setting, in any other setting, it gives you that pair of extra lens, right? That unique lens where you see things from a different perspective, where that helps with problem solving. And we were trying to talk about why a lot of TCKs might not necessarily see that because of I mean, I know I certainly went to a phase where I was like, well, what do I have to offer? You know, maybe when I graduated out of college, I was like, oh, I just graduated. There's nothing I can do. But, you know, these are things you can tell, you know, potential employers and saying, you know, growing up in such and such, you know, it gave me a fresh perspective and opened my mind in sort of way. Now, we talked about how you resolved the feeling of home, but to touch on what we're talking about here, to expand on that rather, in your opinion, what aspects of being a TCK can be emphasized more to make yourself attractive to other people? Just because sometimes when I see a lot of the written philosophies on TCKs, it's about, you know, depression and identity, but I'm trying to put a positive spin on you know, some of the positive aspects of being a TCK. So I'm curious, in like a 17-year-old TCK or someone that just is really about to be an adult and is trying to sell himself, what would you say?
Well, I would say, I mean, definitely the thing that I just mentioned about having different perspectives or more than one perspective on things, knowledge base, I guess, because what's common knowledge in one culture is not common knowledge in all cultures, and maybe you bring more with you from different from several cultures in terms of what is common knowledge. Interest bases could be definitely broader, and that would be something that you could use to kind of stick out of the crowd if you're applying for a job or
you're right. I was just saying that because I wanted to hear you voice that out, because I've been hearing that a lot myself, and I've seen that, and that's something I've applied in my life. But I think it's always great when other TCKs can hear from other TCKs actually validating that. So thank you for that. I'm really, really curious about your Cote d'Ivoire experience, because I know when I first moved to Burkina Faso, Nigeria is a English-speaking country, and this was when I was 10, when I moved to Burkina Faso, it was the first time I was really put in a place with Europeans and Americans, and then I remember feeling like a fish out of water, because I had a different accent, and I only knew how to play soccer. I do it all the time. Football, soccer, football. only I did that. But now, you know, I'm a huge sports fanatic, so I play many sports and watch a lot of that, especially basketball and tennis. But then, it was only I was struggling to fit in, and I remember, you know, there was several identity issues, and I was feeling like a minority, right? Because I was English, I spoke English, mm. a different accent, but it was French speaking country, and then there were different accents and all that. But you were a missionary kid in Cote d'Ivoire, and I'm just looking at the demographic right now. You know, I know that, you know, that's not makeup of a lot of Ivorians.
No.
Oh, it's not. Thank you. You just confirmed. You know, I was just not sure about that. So
really isn't.
So how did you fit in? I'm so curious about that. How did you fit in?
Well, you know, we lived in a village. We did not live in Abidjan or any other city. We lived in a village of about 3,000 inhabitants, close to the border of Guinea.
Right.
And Liberia, actually. Okay. Well, of course, we stuck out. At our first term there, we were just two families, two Norwegian families in that village.
Uh-huh. Two Norwegian families in the village.
We, of course, we stuck out. But we were welcomed. The neighborhood kids would come and play with us. We were small, so they would all, you know, like, babysit us and bring us outside to play. And I mean, we were playing the games that they were playing because we learned to play with them and spoke French with them because, you know, historically, Cote d'Ivoire has been a country that's had a lot of progress, and a lot of kids were in school before the war.
Right.
So most people could at least speak some French or a little bit. I mean, not all the adults, but a lot of the kids could, at least if they had a few years in school. So French was what we needed, and we played in French and played with the other kids, and I mean, they all knew who we were, of course.
Okay.
But we were friends with them and played with, I mean, we lived next door to a family with two wives and 18 kids at the beginning.
18 so kids.
We had 18 kids. So we had a lot of playmates.
All right. Now, what school did you go to at this period? Was it homeschool? Were you homeschooled or?
We had a tiny Norwegian school, because eventually other Norwegian families came as well, and we had a small school. But my first year in school, it was me and the teacher, Norwegian teacher.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, because I mean, it's a village. The school system is French anyway, so it was very different from the Norwegian system, which would make it incompatible when we were going to move back to Norway. So that was kind of never an option anyways to join the local school. Yeah.
Okay. No, that's fascinating. Now, you did that through elementary school or did you go to middle school as well?
Yeah, grades 1 through 4 in Ivory Coast and then 5 and 6 in Norway.
Okay.
And then back for the last 3 years, grades 8, 9, and 10 in Ivory Coast again.
Gotcha. Now, when you did grades 8, 9, and 10, was it still in the same Norwegian school, or had you moved to Abidjan at that point? Abidjan is the capital of Cote d'Ivoire for all of you. Did you move there?
No. Grade 8 was still in that Norwegian school, and then for grade 9 and 10, I went to an international boarding school. Actually, there were actually three international boarding schools for missionary kids in Ivory Coast.
Right.
Because although there were never that many Norwegians, there were a lot of other missionaries, and also the neighboring countries where there were other Western missionaries did not have boarding schools for the kids. So actually kids from Mali and Burkina Faso and Ghana and even Benin came to Ivory Coast to go to boarding school.
No, that's so cool. I mean, I went to boarding school myself, but it wasn't as specialized as that. It was a Nigerian boarding school when I went there.
Okay.
But I love that experience.
Yeah.
I was so happy when Harry Potter came out. I was like, yeah, that's me. I was in my house.
We know that.
that was
good.
No, because you know how the system is different, where you have a head boy and a head girl, and they're like prefects. But then whenever I try to explain it to my American friends, it's, you know, I have to use the student body president, but that's not the same thing, because you have a certain team. So I always think it's cool when I went to a certain border. All right, so Cote d'Ivoire, Norway, were there any other countries that you traveled to, you visited since you've moved Have there been any other countries that you've frequented?
I went, I've traveled, of course, for holidays and stuff, but I went as an exchange student for half a semester to France while doing French in university, and then for a full semester in Montreal, actually, in Canada, also for French studies.
Seulement le français?
See?
All right, so then I imagine that you speak French, Norwegian, yeah. English.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, all right, cool. And then, all right, so when you went to Montreal and you went to France, mm-hmm. what was one way you connected with them? Besides the language.
I guess it's not that easy, actually, to get to know people when you're there as an exchange student, because the people are, I know a lot of people say this about Norwegians, but I find it's kind of the same other places. Certainly what we experienced in France and in Canada. I think, the people, either you're that exotic exchange student that's kind of exciting to get to know, or they are just thinking you're there for just a short time and they have their friends and, set socially. So it's not actually all that easy. We actually ended up hanging out most with the other exchange students from France and Spain and South America.
So then I don't know, for me, I find that whenever I travel, I try to find like connectors. So for me, usually it's sports or I learn about the pop culture, or I learn about the geography there. Right. So it's one of those things I try to connect, and I've heard people say they use food as well. I was curious because, I know as an exchange student, like you said, sometimes you are that exotic. You're like, or then you're like, you're just here for a little bit. What's that going to offer? So, yeah. I don't know if you had like maybe one particular thing that you did maybe to, because Montreal and France are so different. And I'm sure they do say they speak French, but and then I'm sure a French person would say Montreal French is not the same, and in Montreal,
no.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like Norwegian and Danish, actually. If you say Norwegian is French, then Danish would be Montreal French.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So in that sense, you're likening Norway to the actual pure language, and Denmark is the version of the pure language.
I'm sure I'm offending a lot of Danish.
No, hey, I'm sure a lot of people would say this. I'm sure a lot of people say the same thing. But
it's more for me in terms of how the language sounds. Like the Montreal accent in French would sound more similar to Danish accent of the Scandinavian based language or whatever. It's kind of why I'm comparing Danish to Canadian French.
No, don't mind me. I was just starting something over there, but let's talk about stereotypes here for a little bit. What's one stereotype that's different, that's wrong about Norway, that people always say? I know people say the tall, blonde, blue-eyed model. Yeah. What's one stereotype that's different and that's false?
Well, I don't know. That's a hard one. I mean, I guess it's stereotype would be that Norwegians are very reserved, mm-hmm. And hard to get to know. Mm-hmm. And I mean, in one way, that's very true. But I do have to say that also Norwegians, once you do actually get to know them, are very loyal and very caring. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's something that I see in my work, that Norwegians who volunteer for us, mm-hmm. They're just incredible in what they do and how far they go with their hearts and willingness to help out in connecting with the refugees that I work with.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, it's a double thing, I guess. In one way, it is kind of true, but then again, once you actually connect, people are really great.
So reserved initially, but then if you get them, they're very loyal and they're very committed to the work that they put themselves in and they involve themselves in.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, what about Cote d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast?
I don't know what the stereotype would be.
Well, this might, maybe let me rephrase this better. With Cote d'Ivoire, before you went there, Mm-hmm. What was your expectation? And you know,
I was 2.5 years old, so I have no idea.
You were 2.5 years old. When you tell them that you're part Ivorian, what's the reaction mm-hmm. normally get from people? Maybe that's a better way to phrase the question. When like right. when people say, "Hey, you know, I'm part Ivorian," because that's how you introduce yourself to me. You're Ivorian, well, and
I grew up in Ivory Coast.
Yeah, and then. Did they ask you any questions? What kind of questions do they ask you with that when they say, "Well, you're Ivorian? What? How is this? What is that?"
I guess they want to know, like, did we live in the city? How was it? Did I enjoy it? Do I want to go back? Do I want to visit? Do I want to live there again? Those kinds of things, I guess, is more. And when they hear that I lived in a village, they're a bit taken aback. Usually, they're like, "Wow, really? You didn't live in a big city or in huge fancy houses or whatever."
Okay. Okay. Best Norway food. Best Norwegian food.
Oh, we have a lot of good food. I guess maybe if I had to pick like one thing, it would be our Christmas meal, I think.
Christmas meal. What does your Christmas meal consist of?
Well, you have several options in Norway, but the one that I grew up with is salted, dried lamb ribs, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Salted, dried lamb ribs?
Yeah, and wow. You steam it and you have it with potatoes and, some mash and stuff. It's really good. It sounds kind of strange, but
no, that sounds delicious right now. I just had breakfast and I'm hungry for that. But I do like lamb, so maybe that's why I'm hungry. But, what about it in Cote d'Ivoire? What's what was your favorite meal there?
Oh, that would have to be peanuts, butter sauce, and rice, and with fried plantain.
Peanut butter sauce.
Mm-hmm. That's like the national meal, kind of. Was really delicious with beef.
Okay, peanut butter sauce with beef and fried mm-hmm. plantain.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. You are definitely doing a good job of giving me the image right there. So, that's cool. That's cool. It's good to know. And are you like a spicy eater or like you like mild?
Relatively spicy.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. West Africa would teach you that for sure. we're close to wrapping up here, but my mission statement is use your difference to make a difference. Mm-hmm. I'm curious how you, Elizabeth, use your difference to make a difference.
Oh, well, I use it for work. I mean, my education background is I have a master's degree in social anthropology.
Mm-hmm.
And I work now as a social worker for refugees here in Norway. The refugees that I work with have received a permission to stay. They've received asylum, and they're going to start their lives in the municipality that I work. And we help them, you know, get settled with housing. We follow up with their financial situation, health, school. They get started on a 2-year compulsory Norwegian course, which also involves work training. And the goal is, after approximately 2 years, to have them qualified for either more work and or further studies, like high school and university. And I do find that my background in moving between cultures and knowing what it is and what it involves in terms of, you know, identity and adapting and everything is actually a strength for me.
It's good. I mean, I imagine with refugees, you deal with a lot of people from different parts, and and having to navigate between the cultures, obviously, as you have, comes to hand. That's cool. And so, is there what website can we find out, and where can we find out more about what you're doing?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn.
You are on LinkedIn.
I am on LinkedIn. I'm not very active on other places than Facebook and Instagram, I guess. But I also have a LinkedIn profile.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I also do use my background as a TCK or MK to help be the leader of an MK reentry camp, which several of the bigger missionary organizations in Norway go together to have every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
For kids between the ages of 13 and 18 mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Which I got to go to myself when I came back as a 16-year-old, and which really helped me in terms of, you know, coping with all the different issues that arise when you're coming back to a country that you're supposed to know, because everybody expects you to know everything. They think it's your home, your mm-hmm. parents grew up there, and, you know, everybody says you're coming home, but for you, maybe you're not.
Yeah.
Or you feel very ambivalent about it, and people, because you look the same as everybody else, they expect you to feel and act like everybody else.
Well, yeah.
No, and you, especially as a teenager, you know, that brings up a lot of issues. So I think those reentry camps are just really great.
Talk to me about that. What are the issues that happen? Because I mean, going back to my passport country, Nigeria, you know, it's one of those things where you're like you say, you look like them, but you're not seen as, like, you're not Nigerian enough, or you're not Norwegian enough, or you don't know enough of that. So I'm curious as to what the experiences are, since you work with a lot of these kids. What are the most common experiences that they experience, and how have you helped them? You know, what are the tips you would offer? Let's say someone listening to the podcast right now is dealing with a reentry issue, and maybe they're coming back after from their furlough or, you know, whatever. And they want to know how to really fit back into their passport country. What would you say? You know, what are some of the issues, and what would you say to overcome them?
Well, I mean, different issues for different kids, I guess. But really, you know, a part of you is always going to be missing. And that's hard, because you I mean, most of us maybe feel that we never 100% belong wherever we are. Because there's always some part of us missing. You know, the part where you're not is the part you're going to miss, no matter where you are. And I guess coming to terms with that and accepting it and realizing that, you know, you can still live a good life with that. And maybe not worrying quite so much, especially, I mean, for teenagers, knowing the pop culture, knowing all the movie stars and the artists and stuff that your kids your age are listening to or talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll get there. Doesn't matter if you don't get it or you don't know everything right away,
mm-hmm.
or if you play the wrong sports. you know, it takes a while. No matter what, it's going to take a while. And I think maybe trying to relax a little bit,
mm-hmm.
because that was a really hard part for me as well, especially actually when I came back to Norway 11 years old. That was the hardest time actually for me, because I was just so clueless, and people my age were kind of becoming little teenagers. And I had no clue about anything that was connected to the pop culture for kids my age, and that was really hard. And I didn't know how to play, you know, volleyball or the sports that they were interested in. And that was really tough.
Okay.
But it's going to pass.
Yeah.
You'll be fine. And eventually, when you grow up, your background is going to be part of what makes you an interesting person to other people. And it's going to be a strength that you can use both in education and your work experience. Yeah.
And there are a few things I want to pick out of that, because it's so true. And many times when I look back to all those times, I remember how stressed I was. You
mm-hmm.
said it was around 11. It was around the same time for me, 10, 11. And I remember thinking, this is just a hard, sometimes I came back home and I would cry. Just because I was like, this is, what is going on? I mean, I'm not in this crowd. I don't fit in here.
Right.
No one understands, but the advantages show right now, you know, now that I'm an adult, but back then, if I was to give myself any piece of advice, it would be to embrace the process.
Right.
Because that process is what's going to lead to the ultimate, you know, adaptation. It's like it's going to be a relearning process, but if you put an undue amount of pressure on
mm-hmm.
yourself and saying, if you don't get this by then, and if someone asks you a question, did you hear this? And you say no, and then you start slapping yourself like, how did I not know that answer? You know,
mm-hmm.
it's only going to make it worse. So, I mean, it's just like with any other thing. It's you just study the environment, but and take in the process, you know, just like,
right.
Yeah, and don't like be ashamed of the background that you have, even if it's
absolutely. Yeah. So. And also, I think a clever approach, because you know, you have all these different coping techniques that people then end up applying because it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some people will become kind of obnoxiously different, but that can also end up pushing people away that you're actually really trying to connect to.
Right.
Or they're trying to fit in so much that they wipe themselves out, which is also really bad. But I think a good thing to do is do try to maybe hang back a little bit, observe, you know, what people are doing, how they're, you know, interacting or expressing themselves or what that you'll learn so much from just observing people for a little bit, and then you'll feel a bit more confident yourself once you try to, you know, join in a little bit more.
I think observation is key, even with dealing with cultural adaptation. When I do a lot of international students, right, when they come to United States to study, and I'm teaching a course in that, and then you know, part of the issue is how to really fit into the American culture, as that, and it deals with a lot of observation, because, you know, with America's a melting pot, then you can't actually do a one size fit all, and it's not exactly what you see on TV unless you actually experience it. So, yeah, I mean, you're not gonna run it. Not every college is a fraternity or a sorority,
no,
right?
No.
Observation is so key, because sometimes observing someone from New York is going to be very different from someone from Tennessee or from California.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you can't come in there with a certain expectation because you watched a certain movie and just say, ah! And then, it, you know, and you'd be surprised if it doesn't work. So it's,
exactly.
I think you're so right. Observation is so key. But,
yeah.
All right. No, this is good. So as we're wrapping up here.
Yep.
You've already covered everything that I wanted to say. I'm just going to do maybe three rapid-fire questions, and then we're going to close. And,
all right.
We're good. First question, country with the best movie.
Well, the best movie. Oh,
movies,
man.
Yeah.
I enjoy movies both from the United States and from Britain, I guess.
Britain. All right. All right, Britain, U.S. Country with the best music?
That's a really hard one.
I mean, you guys got Nico and Vince over there.
I know. Well, that's actually, I mean, artists with a TCK background somehow really speak to me.
Yeah.
Somehow. We also have Madcon. I don't know if you've heard of them, but you should check them out if you haven't. They're Norwegian immigrant kids. One is from South Africa originally, and one is from Ethiopia.
Right.
And they have the coolest music.
Okay, all right. I'll check them out then. No, I love music. All right. Last question. Country that maybe you had a certain country that you were pleasantly surprised by. So maybe before you went there, you weren't sure what to expect. Then when you went there, you were like, wow, this is really cool.
I think maybe, I don't know, Ethiopia was actually a really great experience.
Really?
Yeah.
How so?
Well, my aunt and uncle were missionaries there.
You have so many missionary experiences, yeah.
Yeah, I know. they were missionaries there for a lot of years, and I heard so much about it. I love the food. And I had the opportunity to go there on a study trip through work in 2012 for 10 days. And it's just such a beautiful country. With so much interesting culture and history, and beautiful people and strong experiences. I mean, we got to visit refugee camps up north with Somalian refugees. We got to visit a fistula hospital in Addis Ababa. We got to be tourists and see, you know, really old Orthodox Christian churches up north in Lalibela. It's just such a varied country with a really, really old history.
Yeah.
So no. I really enjoyed visiting. Yeah.
The thing with Ethiopia, one of the countries that weren't actually colonized by any European country.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of history there. So that, I think it's cool.
Well, also, Morocco is a country I really enjoyed visiting. I was having great expectations of Morocco before I went.
Of Morocco?
Yeah, of Morocco, but I really enjoyed visiting Morocco as well, which is another country with a lot of interesting history and really old history.
Okay, so Morocco and Ethiopia, all right?
Yep.
North Africa and East Africa. Look at that. Yep. North Africa and East Africa from West Africa and Scandinavia. All right, yeah. That's just a TCK right there. So, well, thank you so much for your time, Elizabeth. I really enjoyed the conversation, and I can't wait to get this out there and share your awesome insights.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to use your difference to make a difference, as well as for show notes, head over to www.uidmag.com. Till next time, go out and make an impact in your world.